You are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
Welcome to this special edition of KAZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. On September 19th, at a special Zoom event, Diverse Literary Voices of Texas, Austin Emerging Authors Readings, I interviewed award-winning novelist Bernice McFadden. She is on tour celebrating the republishing of her very first novel, Sugar, a special 20th anniversary edition, and it was originally published in 2000. Bernice was introduced by Dion Schaffner, a recent student of the Austin Community College Creative Writing Program, who was recently accepted into a writing certificate program at Stanford University.
Our next piece is going to be a conversation with award-winning author Bernice McFadden, whose first novel, Sugar, was recently published as a special 20th anniversary edition. Ms. McFadden is also the author of The Book of Harlan, winner of the 2017 American Book Award and the 2017 NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literary Work. This is in addition to 8 other critically acclaimed novels, including Sugar, Loving Donovan, Gathering of Waters, which was a New York Times Editor's Choice and one of the 100 Notable Books of 2012, Glorious, which was featured in O, the Oprah magazine, and was a finalist for the NAACP Image Award. She is a 4-time Hurst and Wright Legacy Award finalist, as well as the recipient of 3 awards from the BCALA. Praise Song for the Butterflies is her latest novel. Let's welcome into conversation Bernice McFadden.
Hi, everybody.
Well, I am, let me just to be honest with the audience, I'm a huge fan of Bernice McFadden's work. I've interviewed her several times. She is one of the best writers, period. One of my favorite writers to read. Let's see, did I do enough, Bernice, or should I keep going?
Thank you for that. Good morning, Hilton.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Well, Bernice, you're actually teaching at Tulane University still?
I am.
And so you're in our hometown of New Orleans, Louisiana, and I got to imagine that working in New Orleans may be some inspiration for future work?
Absolutely. I have a novel that I've been picking at that starts out in New Orleans. It goes to New York, and then it ends in New Orleans.
Wow.
So maybe that's why the universe brought me to this very interesting city.
Yeah, New Orleans is an absolutely fascinating city. So I read in an article that your novel, Sugar, was birthed in part from an unfinished poem you had written, Lada. So how did you go about turning an unfinished poem into a novel that at many points had me stopping and thinking deeply about the nature of friendship and relationships and the sometimes narrow minds of our friends?
So Sugar is celebrating its 20th anniversary. So I really wrote the book probably about almost 30 years ago. And I was hoping and praying that at some point in my life, I would become a published author. And I was messing around with poetry. I'm not a poet, but I have poetic tendencies. And this character kind of just walked into my imagination, and she was tall and she was dark. And I remember saying something like she was the color of Pepsi. And I wrote this poem for her and I put it aside. And I think maybe a year or two later, when I started fiddling with short stories, I went back to that poem and it became the first chapter in this short story. I went on to write other stories, but she just kept calling me back and calling me back. And that's when I decided to sit down and commit myself to writing a novel. And at that time, it just seemed to me that writing a novel was going to be so out of reach for me because I couldn't even imagine trying to get out 300 pages. It was a feat to write 20 or 30 pages. But once I made that commitment, the story just poured out.
So you submitted your novel, Sugar, for over 10 years, and you got over 75 rejection letters. What was it about this story that allowed you to keep faith despite all the rejection?
I believe in myself and I believe in my abilities, and I hate when people tell me no. So that's the thing that I have. I'm like, okay, I'm going to show you. I just felt it in. I just really felt it in my heart, and I felt it in my soul that I was supposed to write this book, and two, this book was supposed to get published. And so each time I received a rejection letter, that was just kindling on the fire. And it took about 10 years and over 75 rejection letters. And those 75 rejection letters that I kept, because I think the first few, I was just tossing them away. But then something said, you should start saving these rejection letters. And so every once in a while, I pull them out and I read through them and I'll post a few, because I want aspiring writers to know that, you know, rejection is fine. And it actually helped me, because the first iteration of the novel, it was horrible. And I have that. And they were fine and right to reject it. The second iteration got a little better, but by the third one, I was like, I have something here. And the fourth one, I was like, this is it. But you know, rejection is not always about the ability of the artist. It's about what the market is looking for. And publishing, I think it's changing now, but publishing wanted a very specific type of book from a Black female writer. They wanted more of the same. And I was kind of not writing what was popular at the time. And so a lot of my rejection letters advised me to read what was out there and model my book after that and resubmit. So they didn't have a problem with the content, and they thought the writing was wonderful, but they didn't think that, well, what they would say is there's no audience for this work. So, you know, white people always tell you what Black people should like, should read, should listen to. And that was the situation with Sugar for a very long time.
So it's very important as a writer to keep true to where your heart leads you with your writing?
Absolutely. I believe so. Yes.
One of the things I love about Sugar, and I hadn't read it before, and so I've read it over the past 2 weeks, is the way Sugar makes her entrance into Bigelow, Arkansas in 1955. The novel starts in 1940, jumps to 1955. And you wrote this: she strutted her way through the main square in front of their children, and more important, in front of their men. They hated her immediately, not knowing of her childhood or the life that after only one day of living it would have had them calling out to the Lord for help. Wow, what a way to introduce Sugar. Talk about how you, and now I got to keep remembering you wrote this book many, many, many years ago. So can you talk, do you remember much of how you created that interest for her? And what are the interesting things when you're doing interviews about a book you wrote 25 plus years ago?
Well, I think that, and I still do this, I drew at that time on family stories that I, you know, was told around the Christmas dinner table, Thanksgiving, and these stories were told over and over and over again. It was my favorite part of the gathering. And so I think that Black people are the best storytellers. And so this oral tradition, that these stories being handed down from generation to generation, and it got to me, I was like, well, I'm the one that's going to put it down on the paper. So clearly someone told a story about a, you know, a fallen woman in one of the small towns that my mother's people came from. And it stuck in my memory. And of course, you know, we have, or I have, I've seen this happen even up north, even just like in the neighborhoods that I grew up in, with some woman who's single, maybe she dresses a little too flashy, and then the people start to gossiping and talking, and they're fearful that this woman is going to come in and steal their men. How do I have a conversation about a book that I've written 30 years ago? It's really difficult because I know that Sugar's in the book. I know Pearl is in the book. I know Joel and Seth and Lappy. All the little intricacies I have completely forgotten. So it's a joy when I, you know, attend a book club and people are talking about all of the little connections that were made in the book. And I'm like, really, that happened? I have completely forgotten. I don't have enough room in my head to hold all of the plot points. So, yeah, it's kind of difficult. I actually should. I think what I'm going to do is download it on audio and listen to it.
I listened to it in audio also, and the actress doing it is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely fascinating. It's an interesting experience, both reading it and listening to it. Very, very interesting experience. So we have these sort of these polar opposites with the striking Sugar, tall, dark, fallen woman, and the grief-stricken Pearl, the mother of a young woman who was brutally murdered in 1940, and she's been grieving for 15 years. Can you talk a little bit about how bringing these, and Sugar's coming into a conservative town. So yeah. Bigelow is a conservative town of sharecroppers and factory workers. So talk a little bit about your thought behind bringing what seemingly on the surface would be two people who would never be friends.
You know, I like that saying, opposites attract. And I'm surrounded by people who have come together, whether it's just like friendship, platonic friendships or romantic entanglements. And it's always fascinating to me when those people come together and it works. And so I think that was in the forefront of my mind when the story was coming to me, you know, slowly but surely. You know, there was Sugar. And first of all, I need to say that I don't write in a linear fashion. Like whatever comes to me on that day, that's what hits the page. Oftentimes I don't know where the story is going. And so if I remember correctly, I had a lot of chapters with Sugar before Pearl even materialized. And then I thought, well, this is quite interesting because here we have this Bible beating Baptist woman who has not, you know, lain with her husband for 15 years, and she is endearing herself to this sex worker. And I didn't know how it was going to turn out, but I think the important point of the story is that one shouldn't judge, right? You should take people at face value, whatever it is they are presenting to you that is true and dear, that is what you should run with. If you look at someone and you just immediately judge them, or you judge them by, you know, the type of work that they do, that can be a loss. That could be a loss. This could be a gift walking into your life, and you've decided to turn your back on this gift because you have these preconceived ideas.
There was a lot of judging going on with Pearl's friends.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of judging going on. So what was the inspiration for writing about the judging?
The judging?
Yes.
So I'm half American and half Caribbean, right? So my father's people are from the Caribbean and at Barbados. And so when I go down to visit with my family, the family house is next door to a church, right next door. And all of these people, all of my family members are very deeply religious. And what would tickle me to death on Sundays is they'd go in and praise the Lord for 2 hours and hallelujah and the tambourine and all of that. And as soon as they stepped out of the church, they were talking about what daughter pregnant and not married. And I was just like, that is fascinating to me. So I think the gossiping part in Sugar came directly from my experiences down in Barbados, witnessing that type of behavior. Not to say that it doesn't happen, you know, here in the States, But that's where I was a direct witness to it.
So Lappy, wow, the villain. I don't know how much I can reveal or how much you don't want me to reveal, but Lappy, my God, Lappy, that's all I can say. I'm going to let you talk about the villain because I don't want to reveal more than I should. But all I can say is Lappy, my God.
You know, I think what Lappy is a composite of all of the men that I heard stories about who were just like horrible, horrible human beings, men who beat and abused their women and their children. All of that, hatred that I felt for men like that, I think I poured into Lappy. And I don't think that he has any redeeming qualities whatsoever. And I don't normally, I think, write characters that have no redeeming qualities, but Lappy does not.
And for the sake of our audience, he was one of Sugar's customers.
Yes.
So Sugar has dreams, though. Sugar has an incredible voice. And so she has a dream of becoming a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And you do this incredible storytelling of her backstory. And her backstory is just so devastating. And as you said, I mean, one of the themes of the book is before you judge, if you're judging you without knowing the story and her story, you're saying, oh my God. So creating that backstory, was that any bit of a challenge to you to the best you can remember?
No, I love backstory. I'm a fan of backstory. I encourage my students to write plenty of backstory. I think backstory is important. Again, it speaks to that judging thing. Like, I don't know what you've been through. I don't know what your story is. We are the sum of our experiences. And until I get to know you, until you start opening up and sharing those things with me, I'm not going to completely understand why you behave the way you behave. So yeah, backstory, I think, is integral to the building of character. Yeah.
But, and mm-hmm. I think actually I kind of misquoted myself. Of course, backstory is super, super important. But I guess I was thinking more about remembering how you created that backstory.
How I created it.
Right, because that backstory is so detailed. It go, you know, you go in, you go out from St. Louis to Chicago to Short Junction, all the characters, and even with the characters that don't have a lot of space, you're telling stories about those, the nuance with even the characters who don't appear much in the book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I don't remember how I did it. I'm not even going to try to fudge it. I do not remember. I'm going to have to go back and reread this story. I don't know.
All right. Well, if you'll forgive me, I'm half Caribbean too, so you'll have some patience with me. My father was from Jamaica, so.
Okay.
Immigrated to Miami in 1949.
I don't know how any of the other writers here today, I don't know how long you hold on to the stories that you've written. But I swear to God, like, once I'm done touring, it's gone because I'm already working on the next story. And I feel kind of bad because yeah. That's like forgetting the names of your children.
Well, Bernice, I really want you to feel good about this because someone will ask me, who did you interview on your show last week? and I may have to pull out my notes from Evernote.
Yeah.
You know, hold it on to all that information.
You get to a certain age. You know how many times I go and check the stove and make sure I turned it off before I walk out the door?
Reverend Foster, the pastor of the church that Pearl goes to, encouraged her to bring sugar into the fold. And Reverend Foster, I thought, was a very interesting character. And talk a little bit about that Reverend Foster, the pastor of her church, he knows sugar's coming to town. Mm-hmm. He knows sugar.
So my mother grew up in Sandersville, Georgia. And her uncles were preachers. Her great-grandmother who raised her was very much into the church. And of course, my mother had to go to church every Sunday. And she would tell me all of these stories about how the community treated the pastor. And he would come over to eat, and they fed the pastor first, ahead of the children. And I was just like, really? She said, yes, you got the big piece of chicken. He got all of that. And that's not anything that I was familiar with in my life growing up in Brooklyn with my family. And so Pastor Foster came directly out of the stories that I heard from my mother and my great aunts and my grandmother who grew up down there in Sandersville, Georgia.
One of the things I got out of your book was sort of the role that Sugar and Pearl, the roles they play in helping each other out, seeing Sugar being there to help Pearl to get over the pain of the loss of her daughter Jude in 1940. And Pearl being there for Sugar to give her a sense of family and love, and how this friendship helped both of them to overcome some of the pain that they endured in the past, and how friendship could come from anyone. They don't necessarily have to be in your circle. They may not be conventional. They may be somebody that you're close friends would say, why are you friends with her? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was sort of this message of, you really don't know where friendship could come from that could really help you to overcome some of the pain you have.
Yeah. I mean, friendship is, it's certainly paramount in my life. I know that there are some things that I've had to muddle through, and I probably wouldn't have survived it without my friends. Like I have a large community of female friends and some guy friends that I look at as my sisters. They say you can't choose your family, but you can. You can choose your family. You can create your own family. And so I knew that I wanted to drive that point home in my novel, Sugar. And I think that's that's a theme that appears again and again and again in my novels. So, it kind of reflects my life in a certain way, because a lot of my female friends are older, much older than I am. And so, I think I was writing from that point of view without realizing that I was actually kind of modeling their friendship or friendships that I have with women in my life.
I want to get a little biblical here, because Pearl has faith, and there's a point in the novel, and I think she's telling this to Sugar. He knew I had turned my back on him after Jude, and she's speaking of God. I told him I would continue to serve him, but I couldn't trust him no more. That was until you showed up. I thought, my God, that was a powerful statement. And frankly, the first thing I thought about in the Bible was Job.
I think we have all found ourselves in situations where we've lost faith. I've certainly been there several times. And so just again, I think that was a moment in the story that needed to happen. I don't want to say that I need to put in there, because that's not how my process works. That needed to happen for two reasons. As I am writing and rewriting this story, I'm still submitting this story. I'm sending the story out into the world. And even though I continued along the path, yeah, there were days that I was like, should I continue doing this? Like, nothing's happening. No one is saying yes to me. And so I'm learning from these two women as I'm writing their story. They are supplying me, right? They're supplying me with the faith to continue on this literary journey. So it was twofold. It was for the reader. It was threefold. It was for the reader, it was for the story, and it was for me.
All right. I would be remiss with all the aspiring writers and writers trying to get to the next stage of success without asking you, as someone who has had, is it 10 novels published? I've lost count.
15.
You've been prolific with getting publishers to publish your work. So what advice would you give to those aspiring writers? I clearly, with the success you have with Sugar and taking the rejection letters as an opportunity to sharpen and sharpen and resharpen and work on it and work on it. So what advice would you give to all these aspiring writers we have listening to you right now?
I always tell aspiring writers to keep reading. To keep reading, read, 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 and write, write, write. Now, there are people out there that's going to give you a lot of different information, and you have to find what works best for you. I think the worst thing to tell an aspiring writer is that writers write every day. Because for those writers who do not write every day, they think that they're not in the game if they don't write every day. I'm telling you, I do not write every day. I've never written every day. The story is with me. It's in my head, so I'm living with it, but I may not sit down and physically write every day. And if you don't do that, that's fine. But you do know at some point you have to put your behind in the seat and you have to put the words on the page. But that's going to be up to you. The second thing is I find it quite interesting that people will give up on their dream after rejection letter number 5 or even number 10 or even number 15. I was like, so you don't really want it. If 15 rejection letters, 20, 25, 30, you're ready to walk away from it. You didn't really want it. I knew that I wanted it. I could have had 1,000 rejection letters. I was going to continue to query. And just, you know, write the story that you want to tell. Commit to it. And it will happen. And believe in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. You can't expect other people to believe in yourself if you don't believe in yourself.
Bernice, thank you so much for joining us, taking time to be with us with this diverse literary voices of Texas, Austin's emerging authors readings. You are, I think, a true treasure, and I think one of the most underrated writers in America. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. Be sure to like my Facebook page entitled KAZI Book Review, and my Twitter handle is @KAZI Books, and my Instagram handle is KAZI_book_review. Have a great day.